I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
Where are you coming in? Is that talking about another big win, obviously overtime win this time for the Bruins. Set up pretty good. I know we're probably on another optimistic Sunday, right? Coming in after a few good wins, teams playing well, closing out games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, get the duck boats ready, right? Like, you can't have a better week in the National Hockey League than we just saw from the Bruins. You can't.
The duck boats. Okay, well.
I'm extremely bullish. I love their week. I loved how well they played. I love their pushback yesterday against Florida with them doing their donkey stuff. I love just how they've won all their games, and I loved how they've played defensively. So, of course, someone might want to call in and talk about how bad the power play is, but beyond that, you can't say anything negative about what's going on right now.
Yeah, and they did score on the power play. It wasn't that it was a pretty power play. It wasn't. None of their power plays.
Yeah, hopefully I'm using that. I'm saying that maybe that's the catalyst. They finally got an ugly one, and now they're going to really get cooking. But it's odd because their team, you know, individually, all five of those guys have gotten going. The Marchands of the world, but they haven't put it together yet on the PP.
Yeah, and the one they got, it was like so simple, right? Like clean entry by Pastrnak. Moves over to Marchand, hits Coyle driving down the slot. And it's like, should be able to do that more often.
Should be. Their entries are really good. They're just not making two passes to break the pressure once they get in the zone. And that's, it's hard to watch because it's so frustrating. And it makes it feel so much worse than just a standard not getting a goal on the power play, going 0-for. So again, they've got to fix that. They've got to at least create some momentum off their power play in a couple weeks. But fortunately, they have a 5-point lead on the division now and can work on, really focus on that with some practice time.
Yeah, and you're still able to win those games even though you're not
exactly
scoring on the power play. And these are playoff teams. Like,
yeah,
two of those wins are against Florida.
Exactly. You can't say, the power play's really got to get going, because when they play good teams like Florida and Carolina and Nashville on the road, I mean, the power play's going to need to be good. Well, no, they've just done that without a power play. So, they've protected themselves. They've insulated themselves a little bit with that.
Yeah, and really just the way they're playing in general is so encouraging over this last stretch. Like, they've matched Florida's physicality. They match Washington's physicality, Nashville. Like, these are physical teams where you have to be physical in order to beat them. And they have. And they've locked in defensively. They're not giving up the odd man rush as we saw them give up so long for like stretches of the season. They're protecting the net front better. Even when teams get some zone time, they're mostly keeping them to the outside. So 4 games left, you know, a couple spread over really 2 weeks before they get to game one of the playoffs. And this is how they have to play. Like, we're finally seeing it. You know, as you guys know, like, I've been pretty negative on some of these shows coming in because I just felt like the incomplete efforts were piling up, were too frequent. But as long as you're going to lock in before the playoffs, like, you can forget about that stuff. And they have, and they've gotten better in third periods. We've seen them extend leads, protect leads, handle pressure situations better. Like, even the 4-minute kill in overtime against Washington, winning in overtime against Florida last night. I know, you know, technically that goes down as a blown third period lead because they give up a goal early in the third period. But I didn't think that was a bad third period for the Bruins. Like, that, you know, it's a 4-on-4. It's a rebound that just goes, lands right on Barkov's stick perfectly, and he buries it, you know, good play. But I thought the Bruins had chances after that. I didn't think they gave up a ton to Florida. Get it to overtime, and then great play by Jesper Bogvist with the steal, the finish. So, you know, it's hard not to start feeling really good about this team because they're doing it against some of the top teams in the league. And yes, playoffs are still going to be another level. You're still going to have to raise your game again. But they certainly look like a team that's getting close to the way you have to play to have success in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're playing simple, like much more simple.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie McAvoy talked about it after the game. He said, we're playing simple, boring hockey, though I would disagree with the boring part because that was actually a very entertaining game. When you play the Panthers, you always get the pushing and the scrums after the plays. So if you paid money to go to that game, you saw a good one. You saw what you wanted, the outcome you wanted. You saw the physicality, and you saw your team playing up to the task of, you know, beating the second best team in your division.
You certainly got your money's worth yesterday, and Florida, you know, provides that most nights. Just especially if you like ratty scrums. It was, the Bruins get outshot 13-5, but I felt like 7 of those shots were on the 4-on-4 prior to the goal. Like they that one shift, they had 4 or 5 shots. It didn't feel like they were under siege in any way in that third period. To your point of how well they've been closing out games, and the simpleness is, again, I've been harping on it since game 3 of the playoffs last season. You can't make plays. There's just too many times you can't make plays in your own zone looking for the middle of the ice in playoff time. It's just too quick. You get away with it in October, November, December when games are a little sleepier and teams are a little sleepier. But I've loved the fact that they've kind of adapted or changed their mindset a little bit defensively on the fly here because it is obvious how much easier it is for them to play. They're not giving pucks, turning pucks over. They're not trying to make these plays to the middle of the ice when it's not there. And I think what it's done, too, is it's made the plays to the middle of the ice more effective because they're not going to it 4 times a shift. It's 4 times a period they're using that middle of the ice, and it's become more effective. The rest of it, it's punt and chase. And that's how Florida, that's how Las Vegas won a Stanley Cup last year, is punt and chase. You need to do it nowadays. And the Bruins defense have done an amazing job of doing that.
Yeah, it's highly reliant on the defense buying into that. Like, that's what we're talking about. Like,
yeah,
those are the guys that had to simplify things.
And the forwards not being frustrated by it. Because there is a little bit of that, too, where the forwards, I think, last season especially, saying we're so good we should be able to make 2 passes and you should put it on my stick and I don't have to go forecheck and I don't want to go into the neutral zone chasing guys down. It's harder, but I think this group has at least in the last few weeks they've been chasing pucks a lot more and it's been a lot more effective.
Yeah, I remember I asked Jim Montgomery about kind of that philosophy. This is probably like a month and a half ago about, you know, how do you balance wanting to exit the zone with possession, either carrying it out or passing it out, versus just flipping and off the glass and going to chase in the neutral zone? And his answer at that time was basically, well, ideally you always want to carry it out. Like, you always want to have possession. It's more surefire than the flip and then turn into a 50-50 battle in the neutral zone. But obviously there's times you have to. And I do feel like there's been a pretty clear shift these last couple of weeks where they're just more willing to flip it out under pressure, whether it's off the glass or up the middle, you know, towards center ice. Now I have a chair.
Chairs are breaking in here now. What a Sunday.
You can just tell, like, they're clearly doing it more. And if your forwards are buying in and are jumping on those pucks in the neutral zone and winning those battles, then you can turn it into more than a 50-50. Like, you can still flip out with purpose. It doesn't just have to be a blind flip right to the, you know, defenseman at center ice who then turns it right back up ice. Like, there can be a purpose to that as well. And you can still win possession or create tie-ups or then win it back and dump it into the offensive zone and then go chase it again. So it's, yeah, like, you have to do that in the playoffs. That was, as you said, like, one of the biggest lessons to take away from last year is you just can't always try to carry it out under pressure and make plays.
Yeah, I just think of the goal in Game 7 where they try and make a play up the right wing to Garnet Hathaway, who's got his back turned right at the Florida bench. They're changing. All it is a flip over on the weak side to get the puck out. They go to Hathaway. Hathaway gets crushed. He gets a puck taken. The puck's in the back of their net in Game 7, 2-1 right away. And that vision in my head, I haven't seen it. I saw it in December. I saw it in January. And against Florida's, against the Carolinas, I'm saying it can't happen that way. But I haven't seen it these past couple of weeks. They have not tried to hit a standing still winger more than four times in the past 2 weeks. They've relied on the opposite ice, the open ice, and putting pucks in that area. And that for me is the difference and the game changer in a 7-game series for them.
Well, and you even saw that work in the Bruins' favor yesterday on one of their goals. The Panthers did try to make that pass up to the boards to a wing standing still, and Hampus Lindholm keeps it in, and 3 seconds later the puck's in the back of the net. So, you know, you see the flip side of it right there too, where mm-hmm. Panthers, you know, in that case would have been so much better off just flipping it out, tried to make the pass to the wing, and it cost them. So, yeah, among so many other things, like, clearly one of the good things the Bruins are doing recently, just the intensity level that they've turned up here is so encouraging to see. And it's so weird how, you know, people still view this as like, well, the Panthers are the much more physical team, and can the Bruins match it? And it's like, they've matched it 4 times this season.
Exactly.
They've beaten them all 4 times. And yet, like, I obviously, because of what happened in the playoffs last year, the Panthers still have that boogeyman feel, and they will until or unless the Bruins go further than them in the playoffs, whether they're the ones to knock the Panthers out or someone else knocks the Panthers out first. But this idea that, like, the Panthers have their number, I mean, this season just doesn't back that up. And, like, I don't think they're catching the Panthers on bad nights or anything. Like, they're getting the Panthers' best efforts or something very close to it, especially these last 2 games in the last week and a half. And they're matching them, and they're winning the games.
Yeah, the physicality they're matching, they're matching the verbalness. I don't know if that works, but it sounded okay when it came out. They're just, and you're right, especially the last two, you know, whatever, we'll give the Florida pass in the first two that they're still, you know, they're coming to the Garden after their game 7 and they're feeling good and they didn't really focus, but they wanted to win those last 2 games. Like, they wanted to win the division. They're not happy that they have to play Toronto in the first round. Now, that isn't a good matchup for Florida. That is, there's a lot of bad stuff for Florida having to not win the division, and they were on a roll. And they couldn't close out the last 2 times against Boston. And I think certainly, as you said, it won't matter when they play in the second round. It's still going to be about how the Bruins didn't close last year. But I think inside of that room, they're going to take a lot of confidence that they're not going to get bullied around by this group. We can play the same kind of game they can. We can make it frenetic and chaotic and still find our way through all of that.
Yeah, and basically, when you look at the standings now, Florida's
pretty much out of reach from that first place position because they have four games left. They'd have to win three of them, and the Bruins would have to lose three in order for them to pass Boston. So
yeah, it's a four.
And lose three in regulation.
Yeah. 4-point magic number, right? Like the 4 points can't disappear. Yesterday, 3 points disappeared for Florida alone. So yeah, it's very much shaping up a Bruins-Tampa first-round matchup, and I think that's, if nothing, it's going to be hard no matter what for the Bruins, but I like Florida playing Toronto more than Florida getting away from Toronto. I think it makes it really hard for both of those teams for the second round.
Yeah, and definitely want to get into
the possible
Bruins-Lightning first-round matchup as we go on here, because that does seem like that's kind of solidifying as going to be the matchup.
It's most likely, but I mean, they could, if they somehow, I mean, they're only 1 point off from the Rangers. If they finish first in the conference, they could be facing one of those wild card teams, which we can get into. There's like a shuffling four different teams that can make that last wild card spot.
Kind of overlooking that, but you're right. It's, you know, it's there. It's there. We could have the Rangers stumble. The Rangers have the Islanders a couple times, but the Rangers have an easy schedule. But you're right.
The Islanders need to win.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a desperate team.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
best place, so baby.
We want
President's
hear.
Trophy if they do that, by the way. We're going to get into that whole thing. Who wants the President's Trophy? Because if they win it again this year, that'll be pretty incredible. If they sneak in at the wire and get a President's Trophy.
Just by 1 point.
Yeah, pretty cool.
All right, we want to hear from you. Are you starting to believe in this team? And what does that mean? Like, do you believe in them to get to the second round, conference finals? Do you think this is a cup contender? You can call in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We're going to fix the studio here. Right there in the break.
A little bit of a rocky start. Yeah. Scott's mic wasn't working, so we're going to fix that.
Do you need that? Do you need a mic?
You kind of need a mic. I was talking to myself for a little bit there.
You're listening to Sunday Skate on WEEI.
What do you think you guys have been able to find in terms of finding your game this last week and a half? So
there's a certain simplicity that we have to play, but it allows us to have success. And you know, at times it might be boring, but it's winning hockey, so it's getting the puck behind them, staying above them, you know, being opportunistic, but overall not beating ourselves. You know, everybody at this level knows what's right and knows what's wrong. So it was sort of a little bit of a, you know, moment a couple of weeks ago looking at ourselves and you know, identifying like, hey, we know we're beating ourselves. We're giving up things that we shouldn't. So it's really was kind of something that we had to dig deep and be like, we're going to play simple and we're going to play responsible. And, you know, we've done it for a couple of weeks now and we've seen some good results. So.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue.
With a fixed mic.
With my Bruce Springsteen. I already feel way better about this segment.
We're cooking now.
So that was Charlie McAvoy talking about what we just touched on in the first segment, which is the Bruins just simplifying. He mentioned they had a moment where they kind of had to look at themselves and realize, like, hey, we're just beating ourselves. Obviously, you assume that moment he's talking about was that wake-up call in practice, Montgomery bag-skating them. And, you know, I don't want to act like, you know, that's too big of a deal, right? Like, at some point, this team probably would have dialed in and realized what they have to do anyways. But sometimes you just need that kick in the rear from the coach to sort of let you know, like it's time, right? Like, there were 10 games to go at that point. They'd had two incomplete efforts, a really rough third period against Philly in the game, like, 2 days before that. And sometimes you just need the coach to step in and let you know, like, all right, we're not waiting 2, 3, 4 more games. Like, it's happening now. It's time to lock in now. And it really seems like that message got through because they have been so much more dialed in. And, you know, McAvoy touched on it there. I know Charlie Coyle touched on it after the game. Like, it seems like they might have gone there anyways, but That was a really good time for that message.
Well, they're 5-1 since that practice. And the one loss was against Tampa. And in a game that they didn't play horribly, it was the back end of a back-to-back. And, you know, they weren't – that was the one you kind of expected them to lose out of those games. And these were all good teams that they beat, too. Like, these are all playoff teams. Well, technically, the Capitals aren't anymore. We can get to that at some point. But those were tough games that they won. And they have had those 60-minute efforts since then, and it's hard to overlook like that as a turning point, though, right, Razor? Like, it seems like before that, the practice where Monty yelled at them, to now, there has been a flip, like a switch that has been flipped for them.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I think, again, I mentioned this at the time. Like, I think that was fairly premeditated. I know even yesterday he talked about it being emotional. And I'm sure a lot of the words and a lot of the things that came out of his mouth were emotional. But I think everybody within that coach's room and probably the players as well looked at the schedule and said, okay, this is where we need to become playoff ready, become a playoff team. And he might have wanted it the day before the Philly game, and it might have been the Philly game in the third period and the odd man rush with a minute and a half left that was so brutal that really put him over the edge and said, I'm going to destroy these guys on Monday morning. But I think there you could see, and he talked about this yesterday as well, was how the schedule has lined up for this team this season. And it's been a perfect schedule. That March 25th was a perfect day at a perfect time with the schedule, with the six games on the road against really good hockey teams to get everybody's attention. And it's all fallen into place. They've gotten through that six-game stretch. They've gotten better in every game. Their defense is legit. And now you get four games over 2 weeks to kind of work through, win a couple of them, get a point in another one, and get everything dialed in real well. So yes, it will be the turning point in game one of the playoffs, because it's proven, this team has proven that they can do it a bit of a different way, and it's not just about winning 5-2.
And still, I would say one more real marquee game to go, with Carolina coming into the Garden on Tuesday, team you just beat, and they're building on Thursday. So I'm sure there'll be some motivation for the Hurricanes to want to repay that. So, you know, you're not like totally in the clear in terms of those big, big games. And even
Pittsburgh's going to be a monster game. That game is going to be do or die for Pittsburgh. Yep. So,
yeah,
and you could have them in a playoff matchup possibly point too.
And also the Capitals are only 1 point out of a playoff spot, and you play them again.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what they do back to back. That'll be interesting to see, especially assuming the Bruins will be locked into a position there. It looks like that will happen. It'll be interesting to see if they do the old emergency call up times 8 for those games.
Yeah, and that is the road game of that back to back. So if you're thinking about, hey, save some veterans that trip down to DC, have them play at home the next night, that would make a lot of sense. Let's go to the phones here. We'll start, of course, with Maria from Watertown, a topic we haven't touched on yet, Justin Brazo's injury. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. First of all, I just want to congratulate Brad Marchand on that huge accomplishment. 400 goals for any player, I think, is a significant milestone, but doing it all in the same jersey is even, to me, a bigger accomplishment. So congratulations to him. And with regard to Justin Brazo, you know, given that we haven't had a lot of information on his injury, if he's out for any significant period of time, where does that impact potentially Patrick Maroon if and when he's ready? And if he's not ready, how do they bridge that gap? And Razor, you're going to hate hearing this from me, but I kind of sort of hope they do the platoon for the playoffs, because I think both of those guys are making a very good case for the opportunity to continue the platoon in the playoffs. So thanks for the time. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you, Maria.
Thanks, Maria. Yeah, so let's start with.
I don't hate anybody who likes the platoon, by the way. I'm not judgmental in personal lives in any way whatsoever.
Is there anyone Razor does hate?
No, there's a couple people, but they don't know it.
They don't know it. You can tell them right now if you want. No.
All right, so let's start. We'll get to the goaltending part of it, but let's start with Brazo's injury. So and Maroon. So the latest on Brazo is that there really hasn't been much of an update. He was getting more testing done when he got back to Boston. Montgomery was asked on Friday and said he still didn't have any real update. They're calling him week to week, so that could be anything from, hey, there's a chance he's ready for game one to, you know, could end up being season ending. Like, we just don't know. So hard to project there. I do think it's, you know, listen, obviously he's not one of their top players. He's not one of the stars, but I do think it's an important loss. Like, he had been playing really well for them and had brought elements that they were missing in their bottom six. Now, Pat Maroon can bring some of those, assuming he's healthy. And the latest update there is that they're still targeting next Saturday in Pittsburgh for his debut. So it sounds like he'll get at least one, probably two regular season games in. I doubt he would play both nights of the back-to-back to close out the season. So you'll see where he fits in. I think as long as he's healthy, Pat Maroon's in the lineup, I would think. Like, someone else can get bumped out, because I just think what he can bring with the playoff experience and some of those elements of physicality, holding onto pucks down low, getting to the net front, that you're now going to miss with Brazo out, kind of think like Maroon almost has to be in.
Yeah, well, you didn't trade for him to just have him sit and
right.
practice. And, you know, there's a key role he's going to play, and the role that he's been brought in to play, which is to be that kind of spark physically in the bottom six. And you talk about, oh, who might have to come out, especially now as Brazo, which I said this to you the other day, week to week is my least favorite designation for like an injury, because it could mean 7 days or it can mean 2 months. Like, it's such a big difference between you knowing like, okay, this is long term or this is day to day. It could be anywhere in between. It's very vague. So we don't know if we're going to see Brazo before the playoffs, in the playoffs. We haven't got an update since that last game where he flew back from the road trip. But anyway, Razor, I guess to get your thoughts on where Maroon would slot in and how important Brazo, like how big of a loss it is.
Yeah, I agree with all of that with Maroon. Just a little asterisk on that is how quickly or how well he ramps up, you know, like where he's at. But he has the absolute inside track on that position on the fourth line. He is going to play as long as he can play and as long as he can get around. It feels like this Saturday is 100%, just because they've mentioned it three times and they go week to week with Brazo, but they've given specific day for like 2 weeks on Maroon. So I don't see a reason how it isn't. I assume he's probably ready to go now, and they're being extra careful with a full week of practice coming up to really crank him up. And I think I think Brazo has been very good. I think he's been something very different that the Bruins haven't had maybe for a really long time. I think Maroon's probably pretty similar. Once we see him get out there, he's going to look similar to Brazo in what he does. So I'm like I saw Carlo go down in the third period, and then I saw him walk down the tunnel. Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I don't do that with Brazo injury. Like, yes, he's a nice piece, and yes, he's important, and yes, I'd rather have him in the lineup, and yes, he would be in my lineup no matter what if he was healthy, but he's not like, oh my God, how are they going to win if, you know, when he goes down the tunnel? So I think we see, you know, I don't know, week to week, it definitely feels like this is going to be that one where playoffs are going to get going, Maroon's going to come back, we're going to forget about Brazo, and he's just going to show up on the ice. And it'll be like, oh yeah, that was like 5 weeks ago he was injured. And so that, to your point, the week to week is doesn't seem like we're going to see him here to start the playoff series, you know. But he's going to be valuable. It's upper body. Hopefully he can skate lots. Hopefully he can stay in shape lots and come back at a pretty good pace, because he will be valuable if you can work him in late in the first round or in the second round or in the third, whatever it is. You can see, and I think that's where everyone's kind of coming from. Everyone who watches hockey can see that his body type, his skill set really does well in playoffs. So I think that's why we all think that it's important that he gets back in. That's what I think. And you hope that he can, because I think he will be helpful.
Yeah, and part of potentially not missing him is the guys who are in being consistent on a game-to-game basis. Like, we've seen enough from all of them where you're like, okay, you know these guys can play. It's a matter of, you know, one of the best things Brazeau was doing was he was playing pretty consistently night in, night out. I think at one point Montgomery said, like, I think it was his first 13 games he was talking about, and he said there was only one game in there where he thought he was a little off. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see any more off nights really after that. So, you know, like right now you look at the lineup and, you know, they move Morgan Geeky up to second line right wing. It's like, okay, well, Jesper Boqvist has to step up as third line center, which I think you started seeing some signs of that on Saturday. I thought Thursday was kind of a rough night for that line with him, DeBrusque, and Frederick. Thought they turned a little bit of a corner Saturday. That also means you need Johnny Beecher to step up as fourth line center. And if Maroon's in there, he's going to be ready to go. And James Van Riemsdyk's working back from an illness that, you know, he lost weight and his game was obviously way off. Okay, he's got to get back and he's got to be consistent. He's got to contribute. So you miss Brazeau a lot less if all of those guys are stepping up. If you run into, you know, these two guys are off this night and these two guys are off the next night, now all of a sudden it becomes a bigger loss, because you're looking at, boy, how do we round out this fourth line? How do we, you know, find a line that's going to be effective every night? Let's go to Tom in Boston here, who has a thought on Bruins playoff matchup. What's up, Tom?
Good morning, everybody. So I'll start by saying this is definitely motivated reasoning, but I think the NHL needs to start valuing the regular season more. The Bruins potentially could win the East, maybe even the President's Trophy, and are on track to play, once again, a team from the state of Florida that is ramping up at exactly the right time. So I don't know if it's 1-8. I don't know if the top seed gets to pick who they play, but they've got to do something, because I'm tired of they're playing, in essence, what it should be the sixth seed instead of some joke team like, I don't know, Washington or Pittsburgh or whoever. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I feel like I'm fighting a losing fight on this one, but I hate the current playoff format. I wish they never went to it. I wish they would go back to just 1-8. Because Tom's right. Like, if you look at the standings, Bruins are going to be either the 1 or 2 seed. And in the old format, that would mean you get one of your Islanders, Penguins, Flyers, Capitals, Red, all these teams fighting for both the third spot in the Metro and the second wildcard spot. But instead, unless you beat out the Rangers, you're getting the Lightning, who, you know, at least on paper, are clearly a step up from all of those teams. So, listen, the NHL's not changing. We've had this format for a decade now. I don't like it, but it is what it is. Like, that, you know, you're going to get, you're in a tough division, and if you don't finish first in the conference, you're going to be locked into a tough matchup.
Yeah, it's. I love 1-8. My bigger thing, even more so, is the reseeding. It drives me crazy that a team could go through and you know, have a layup. But the NHL loves the bracket. They love people. You know, the idea that some people fill out a bracket, etc. It's not changing, and it's part of the luck of the draw now. It's part of winning the Stanley Cup is getting a good draw, getting a good matchup. We saw it in 19. You see it, you know, every year where the one team gets knocked off that you feel like, oh, that second round matchup is going to be so hard. The team gets knocked off. You get to cruise through and you can really parlay that momentum. So I agree. It, you know, at times it's a little stinky. I think there's going to be, you know, You're looking at the Rangers and Carolina, you know, going at it in the second round. I mean, you could argue that's not fun. There's a bunch of different ways you can look at it, but it is what it is. And again, I've been banging the drum, but it is completely useless because it's not changing.
Yeah, I like the 1-8 better. That would put the the last three teams that would make it in the East would all be in the Metro. And I'm sure Tampa would rather, you know, not be playing the Bruins in the first round either. So, yeah, I kind of stopped even, thinking about it because I know it's not going to change. So I just don't even bother myself with it. But when you do think about it, it is frustrating when you're one of those top teams and you're drawing. Tampa Bay, not an easy team to beat.
Well, in some years, sometimes it's even more egregious than this.
Yeah, it's not that bad this year. Sometimes it really isn't that bad.
The
yeah.
one seed in the division could end up with a tougher matchup than the 2 seed in the if you're in a weak enough division where that 2-3 matchup isn't really two great teams, the first wild card could be a better team than the 3 in your division. So it's very wonky, but the NHL they think it creates rivalries. I guess maybe you could argue that it does. Would the Bruins view Tampa or Florida as much of a rival as they do right now if you didn't have some playoff series against those teams? I mean, maybe not, but you could have rivalries with you face Carolina a couple times. That can still be a rival. You could have a rivalry with the Rangers or whoever. Maybe you face Pittsburgh somewhere along the way. I still think you can create rivalries outside the division. We've seen that plenty in the past, Bruins Flyers in the early, 2010, 2011 in that range. I don't know. I don't think you need to stick to the divisions, but the NHL does. So,
and Tom mentioned, maybe I know that it sounds crazy, but the PWHL is actually trying it this year. Have the top seeded team pick their opponent from, there's only 6 teams, so they get to pick between the 3rd and the 4th place team. And the equivalent to the pro to the NHL would be if you're the Bruins and if you win the President's Trophy, you finish first in the conference, you get to choose what wild card team you want to play against. That would be,
That ain't happening.
You get to choose your.
No GM signing up to that. They are not putting their necks on the line to be that team that picks another team. That will never.
And we haven't seen it yet in the PWHL, so I wonder if there's going to be a taboo thing where you just pick the team that you were supposed to play anyway.
Yeah, that's the safe play for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely adds a fun element to it, but yeah, the PWHL can do that because it's one person or a small group of people in charge of all the decisions. To Razor's point, you're never getting 32 GMs to sign off on that or 32 owners or governors or whatever, so... all right, we got to catch our next break here. You can call in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We'll be back right after this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. I'm Scott McLaughlin. And Bridget, I think you had some questions, or at least one question for Razor Bodine.
Yeah. So I want to do this weekly, actually, because I sit around watching these games and I'm thinking to myself, I wish I could ask Razor this right now, because it's goalie questions that come up. Some of them are stupid. Some of them are Bruin specific. Some of them are just dumb thoughts that pop into my head. And I'm sure people like myself who never played goalie and didn't play professionally like you did, probably have some of these questions that you could answer for us pretty easily.
Hopefully.
So the one that came into my mind this week that I'll start with is we saw Allmark and Swayman both have assists on that road trip. Swayman had one against Florida. Allmark had one against Nashville. And it came to my mind, like, how big of an asset is it to have a goalie that can play the puck well like that? And because really what you're seeing with those assists is they're starting to transition. Is that an underrated part of a goalie's game?
It can be. It can be. There's guys that do it much better than others. I think
Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, Igor's awesome at it. He rips it up the ice. It's more so in the, not necessarily transition, but the breakout. Stopping the puck, making a 6-foot pass. One side of the net or the other. Making the right decision on when to rim it. You see a goalie bobble now or a goalie mishandle or a goalie putting in a defenseman's skates with the forechecks being what they are now is so penal. You end up in your zone for so long and it inevitably turns into a chance, I feel like, when the goalie doesn't make a good play. So certainly these guys have both gotten much better at it. Linus has always been good at it. Jeremy's really worked hard at it. He was awesome starting kind of last year. It making that 10-foot play to the defenseman, letting them get out of the zone. So it's super important. The assist is kind of secondary. It's kind of lucky a lot of times, especially Swayman's more lucky than Allmark's even. But Allmark, like, he wasn't trying to set up an assist there. Those kind of go, you just like getting those. You know, you're like hearing your name get called over the yeah, the big board.
But sometimes you see those, like, a legitimate pass that goes to, say,
a lot of times it's on a line change or the power play, right?
Yes.
That quick up turns into play. That's really exciting as a goalie. You get a couple of those in your career. But, again, a lot of it isn't the assist. It's that transition in your own zone.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how good were you at that during your career?
I was I probably worked into a 7. I wasn't Marty Turco, who was a 10, or Martin Brodeur, who was a 10. Those guys changed it. But I also wasn't Roberto Luongo, who couldn't go out and stop it and didn't care. He just wanted to stop pucks. So I was, you know, I was fine at it. I had to work really hard at it, especially when I got up here. It was fast, but I felt pretty comfortable moving it around.
Yeah, you don't in college hockey, you don't see goalies play the puck quite as much as in the pros.
No, it's a confidence, and I don't think younger goalies work on it enough. They're not good enough skaters a lot of times. So you have to the guys that are the very best are good skaters, and they get out there and they work on it, and you have to be good at it. Like, you can't not be good at it at the NHL level. At least be a 3 on that scale. You can't be a 0.
You can't be a 1 or
unless you're a Hall of Famer like Roberto Luongo. So you have to work at it.
How much did the trapezoid limit what goalies can do? And have we kind of outlived it? Like, it.
Well, it doesn't exist in college.
And, like, you know, when you watch leagues that don't have it, it doesn't feel like the game's, like, any worse for it.
I think you could go back. You could get rid of it now. And because the forechecks are, you can't hold guys up anymore. You can't, you know, the game is so much faster. At the time, it was necessary because you would play against Ed Belfour or Marty Brodeur or Marty Turco. And because of the way that you could hook and hold in the neutral zone, you literally would get like 6 shots on goal a game because you would dump it in. They would go out and they would break it out and then it would go the other way. Like, it was painful to watch because Eddie Belfour's in the corner making like spinoramas and banking it off boards. And it's like, what are we paying to watch this stuff for? So it was necessary at the time. But now you could probably get away with it, but I think you would be surprised at, you know, guys aren't going to go to the corner, but those 5 feet, initial 5 feet off of the net where the trapezoid is, guys are staying in the net because of that. But if that's not there, they're going to be more aggressive and they're going to get pucks and they're going to rim it. I think we'd be surprised at how much the goalie would start influencing forechecks and breakouts again.
Yeah,
really
then,
quickly.
And then that would make that puck playing ability even more important.
It would. And that was like the argument. Well, they're so good at it, then that you should be allowed to have that skill. But if it's ruining the game, it's not, you know, it doesn't work that way. So like the idea of that is good. And that was the argument at the time why we shouldn't have the trapezoid. But I never really sponsored that because, again, it was like there was enough guys if you had six guys, someone every night is kind of affecting the game in a bad way or a negative, slow way. So I think that would happen here, too, where, yeah, you would have a couple guys, but those guys aren't going to go and play it. It's not like you have to go play You have to go play it. So that was the other argument. Well, the guys are bad. They'll turn the puck over. There'll be more goals. Well, no, the guy who's bad isn't going. So he's not turning the puck over because he's not even bothering. So the guys are really good. They go out and get it, and they make plays. So I think they'll keep it. It would be interesting to see it go away and see what happened, but I think pretty quickly it would be detrimental.
We saw Allmark pull a spinorama a couple games ago. I don't think it was really his plan, but sort of ended up
in that.
You
got to have it there, though. Yeah. Got to have that in the toolbox.
All right, we got to catch our last break here, but hour two of Sunday Skate coming up. Call in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We will be back right after this.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
Since you guys had that practice where Springs saw that, like, you are 5-1. Is there any connection? Is that too easy to say? Is there anything you guys need to wake up and...
There could be, yeah. I mean, sometimes there's a wake-up call. Sometimes, you need something to kind of snap out of things. And, there could be something there. It's hard to tell. Maybe if you didn't do that, or we would be the same thing right now. I don't know. I think it was certainly warranted, and we needed that. And I don't think we're upset that happened. If this is the way we've played since, I guess that's the assist to Monty doing that, I guess. But sometimes you need something like that to kind of just throw a little something and just kind of put us back into place and say, hey, we got to start working here and doing the right thing, and it's worked out.
Welcome back. Hour two of Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. That was Charlie Coyle talking about that wake-up call from Jim Montgomery, the wind sprints in practice now 2 Mondays ago, March 25th, and saying, hey, maybe we would have gotten here regardless, but did feel like we needed that at the time. So, as Coyle said, assist to Monty.
Assist to Monty. There you go.
Yeah, and when he was his like initial, because I was there when Amelie asked that question, his initial answer was like, I don't know. But then he kind of got more into like, okay, yeah, I think it was probably a turning point for us when we just had needed a little reminder we're at the point we're at in the season. Like, this is not the same type of game as middle of the season. Like, you need to start picking it up now.
Well, and part of that, Razor, I'm sure there's an element of, if you're a player, you don't really want to admit that you needed your coach to kind of to wake you up, right? Like, you probably always want to believe that you'd figure it out on your own anyways.
Yeah, exactly. And the question's uncomfortable too, right? Like, it's one of those things, like, where as a player, and even the way Monty answered it the other day, it's like, that's kind of like too inside personal stuff. That it just, like, when I hear the question as a player, I'm thinking, well, I can't really give you much here. Like, I can't really tell you what's going on here. I have to get defensive right away and just kind of give you the stock answer the way. And yeah, give the coach a little bit of credit, but don't rip on my teammates. I'm taking it a little personal because I would have figured it out my own. Like, so you're right. It's just kind of a loaded thing. But that's why you have coaches on your team. Like, the coaches are there for reasons like that. And a lot of times too, right, it happens and no one knows about it. This yelling, this whatever it is, doesn't happen in front of a practice. It happens in a locker room after the game in Philadelphia that no one hears about, no one talks about. But that's the turning point for the guys. This was a little more public, and no one feels comfortable when things like team stuff gets public. So I think that's why you're hearing, just a little bit of not a straight answer because of all of that.
Cole's very good at that. He is one of their, they send him out to talk a lot. Obviously, he had a goal yesterday, so that's one of the reasons. But he always finds a way to answer in a way that is never putting anyone down, taking accountability.
Yeah, he's got the Tom Brady playbook down pretty good. Like, say a bunch of stuff without saying anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of like the optics of what the narrative is now after the getting like making them do sprints and then coming out and them actually being 5-1 since then, the narrative has been that like good job, Monty. Like that's kind of the messaging that you feel. So even though he probably doesn't feel comfortable answering questions about it, I'm sure he hears people saying, you know, that was the right thing for him to do, and he's getting like this positive approval for the way that he acted.
Well, that's important too, because I mean ultimately Montgomery is going to be judged on what happens in the playoffs. If you know, if they collapse in the first round losing five games, no one's going to care that he got them to play well for the last 10 games of the regular season. But, you know, there is pressure there. Like, last year they got knocked out in the first round. You know, maybe there was less pressure to start the season, but now you've been one of the top teams all year, so there's expectations again for the playoffs. So, yeah, as a coach, like, he has to figure out how to get them playing the right way, because there was clearly a stretch there where they weren't doing that. So, yeah, he absolutely deserves credit for getting them there now. Obviously, the ultimate judgment is going to be what happens in the playoffs. But sure, yeah, full marks now.
It's the ultimate. Enjoy it now because it won't be there in 2 weeks.
Right.
Yeah, it's a completely irrelevant when you lose game one. So enjoy it while it lasts. You know, the coaches don't get a lot of positive reinforcement. So good for him to get it now.
All right, let's go to Joe in Ohio here.
Speaking of reinforcing people that don't get a lot of love, this is a perfect segue into that.
What do you got, Joe?
Yes, I'm calling about Don Sweeney and the job he's done as general manager. Not only this year he did a tremendous job, but let's remember, last year he set that team up to go all the way to win a Stanley Cup, and the players and coaches kind of let him down a bit. And he came back this year and did a great job. And what I want to go back to is he was still hearing about that 2015 draft as late as last year. And yes, they had three straight picks, and it has turned into kind of a disaster. But let's face it, he was new on the job. He was a new GM. And if you remember right, he was trying to line those picks up to trade up to get Noah Hanifin, and it fell through. And then all of a sudden, they had to make three straight picks. And I'm sure he had a lot of input on those picks. It wasn't just him. And so I've always kind of been on his side, because I thought that he took a lot of heat in Boston all through these years. And he's did a wonderful job, I think. And another thing is, you look at some of these trades, and I'm not bashing any of the NHL players because they're all talented. But, I mean, come on. Zacha for Halla, Coyle for Donato. Getting geeky for nothing, basically. I mean, I don't know how people in Boston have been on his back as much as they have. And I just hope that the players and the coaches this year get out of that first round, because that is, like John Cooper says, the Wild West. And one other thing, I don't like this playoff structure at all. I really don't. Too many good teams get knocked out in the first round. I like the way it used to be, 1-8. And that's about it, and you guys do a wonderful job. You're a really good blend of three people, and I like hearing all your opinions. So I'd like your comments on that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joe. Yeah, so Sweeney, listen, like there can still be some questions about drafting here and there. And, yeah, obviously 2015 was a whiff. And, it felt like they were just like a step slow at every turn. Cam Neely's talked about this numerous times. It's not really worth diving into at this point. Since then, I would say, like, other than that, take that out, because it's such a glaring kind of opportunity blown. Since then, I'd say his draft record is fine. Like, it's every other GM. There's a couple misses, but there's some real hits. And, you know, given how few first-round picks they've had, like, Mason Laurie in the second round looks like a really good pick. Matt Potter in the second round looks like a really good pick. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see about Fabian Lysell. You're still waiting for him to get to the NHL. Let's remember, you know, Charlie McAvoy was not a top-10 pick. He was 14th, like, or 13th, or whatever it was. Like, that's a huge hit. You know, it's easy to look back now, and people will be like, oh, McAvoy was obvious. And it's like, if McAvoy was obvious, he would have gone in the top 10. Like, he wouldn't have been there when they picked. Yeah. So you got to give him some credit. Swayman was, what, a fourth-round pick?
Like, yes. And Swayman they drafted before he even got to college, before they had the sample size of – because obviously he had a great college career at Maine. But they drafted him before they even got a chance to see him at that level. So that was a really diamond in the rough find for them as well. He's turned out to be great. So obviously that's a big hit. And when you talk about the 2015 draft too, in the past 2 years, Sweeney went back out and grabbed someone else from that draft, which was Pavel Zacha.
He was like, I'm just going to keep making up for it by getting different guys from 2015.
Yeah, so he grabs the sixth overall pick, Pavel Zacha, as the center for, like the caller mentioned as well, that, you know, traded for him and got him. And he's been great since bringing him in. I feel like the turning point for Sweeney and how people looked at him as, you know, kind of recovering and back to this positive side of things was that Taylor Hall trade at that deadline. Like, pulling that off, and obviously he had help because Hall – He determined where he was going to get to go. But that made Sweeney look good. And then from that point on, they were able to build these really strong teams that obviously won the President's Trophy last year. And the additions that he's added outside of drafting have looked really good.
Yeah, I would go back another year in Coyle and Martin Johansson, right? Yeah. You got those two guys at the deadline. That was huge. That was why they went as far as they did in 19, because those two guys on the third line were nails. Now, the whole 15 draft is so overrated, played, talked about. This is why. One, the Bruins have never just thrown a Barzell or a Connor into their lineup who don't play defense, who don't play a 200-foot game, who kind of score goals. Shabbat, we heard about him all the time. He stinks in Ottawa. He's never played a playoff game. He's just out there all the time eating dashes on a bad team. And so all three of those guys, even if you pick the three guys that are best in that draft after – all three of those guys would not have come to Boston and played right away, or they would never have played, period, because they wouldn't have gotten the opportunity because Bruce Cassidy was here. He didn't want young guys. Claude Julien was here. He didn't want young guys. Like, they play a 200-foot game in the minors before they figure it out like they do. And then, of course, salary cap. You can't pay all three guys $8 million that they're all making right now on top of that. So I don't know why. I get why. It's just easy to go back to that, but – like we all know, NHL draft is unless you're in the top five, everything else is it's not the NFL draft. It's not like this big board that I have to hear about every single day here
you
about the third overall
right
pick.
Here,
like
the countdown
18
that we have.
Days, like it, that the NHL draft doesn't work that way. You're drafting 18-year-old kids that you're trying to project 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. It's completely different, and I think you have to. You have to judge a general manager on what he's doing with the team now, and whether that's picking up an Andrew Peak, going after the Charlie Coyles, the Taylor Halls, the signing of free agents, the signing of a Brazo, the signing of Boquist, the signing of Geeky. I mean, he's put this whole thing together, and it's really quite impressive. The Danton Heinen, and knowing that guy
getting
was going to work.
As a free agent.
Getting Allmark. He was the best goalie in the market, and they did what they needed to do to get him, and he's proven it. So, yeah, it's across the board for me, and it's really, you know, there isn't at GM that's done a better job. There isn't. There just isn't.
Yeah, you guys covered some of the trades. Like the when was the last, like, I'm trying to think, like, really bad contract they had?
Yeah.
I mean, like, David Backes, obviously, like, if you go back that far, but you might have to go back that far. Like, even all the ones people have questioned, you mentioned Ullmark, he's clearly been worth the money. Like, you can't argue against that. You know, Hampus Lindholm, that was a big contract before he ever even played a game here. I know Hampus Lindholm has his detractors. I think he's absolutely been worth it. And I think he'll continue to be worth it. You know, Nick Foligno looked like a bad contract year one, looked a lot better year two. He was healthy and he played much better and was a big part of that team last year. So, you know, Taylor Hall, like, that was a perfectly reasonable deal, and you end up moving it in the end because you had other cap issues, but it's not because it was like a bad contract. So, yeah, it's the last few years at least, it's really hard to be critical. And obviously they had real cap constraints this year that forced them to go, you know, bargain bin shopping. That's because they went all in last year. So, like, if you're going to criticize them for not having more cap space this year, you better have been criticizing them when they traded for Orlov and Bertuzzi and signed Bergeron and Krejci to, you know, deals loaded with bonuses. Like, no one was, because you were going all in last year. So, like, you can't play that game. Like, what Don Sweeney did last year was absolutely what he should have done with that team. Like, that was the team to go all in with. Obviously, it blew up in the playoffs, but, like, I don't put that on Sweeney. He put he put as good of a team on the ice as you possibly could have.
And he's done it again this year, right? Like, he was able to organize after a really disappointing spring, organized this summer with his back up against the wall under this cap situation, was able to get the guys in here that were a lot, like, they're 1 point off a President's Trophy again. And no one saw that coming, and he filled the roster to the point. So, again, it's you can't argue again what he's done this year. So it's back-to-back years where he's put a President's Trophy team together, or contending team together, with a lot of restrictions on that. So it's impressive.
All right, we got to catch a break here. More Sunday Skate after this. Call in 617-779-7937. Tell us what you think of the Bruins as they're now four games from the playoffs. Are you buying in? Four-game winning streak.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Fully rotation for the playoffs. Are you thinking it would be basically the same you've done the regular season, or would you do game one, game two, same guy, go back to somebody else?
I think if we commit to a rotation, it's going to be game one, game two, game three, game four, if that's what we end up deciding, and then we can go from there. You know, I mean, obviously, performance and winning in the playoffs dictates a lot of decision-making, but this is what we're comfortable doing. It's what our goalies are used to preparing, you know? So we'll see what ends up happening. It's hard when you win game one. If you do win game one, the switch. But if you're committed to it and it's the way you think your goaltenders have had tremendous success the last 2 years, it doesn't make a lot of sense to switch. But as we all know, results really matter. They're immediate in the playoffs.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. That is Jim Montgomery once again talking about the possibility of rotating goalies in the playoffs.
Can't escape the topic, the questions. It feels like it gets asked to him, I don't know, once every media availability. But you know what? That was the best answer he's given so far, or the most detailed answer he's given so far.
So he dances around a lot.
Yeah, you know, like, that was so undetailed,
he finally went into what it would look like if he did it. So he's talking about game one, two, three, four. Like,
I was going to say, the four-game part, I think, was at least a little new and a little insight into maybe how he views it, which is, all right, if you're going to go in, quote-unquote, committing to a rotation, you know, both guys are playing well, you want to use both guys early in the series, basically, you do it two times through. You know, one guy starts games one and three, one starts games two and four, and then you go from there. Either, hey, if everyone plays well, you can keep the rotation going. If one guy's ahead of the other, you go to him for game five, and maybe you ride him the rest of the series. Like, which, I'm on board. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me. You guys know I've been pro-rotation, or at least pro-using both goalies, going all the way back to last year. So, you know, but within that, like, I've never been, oh, you just have to, if you commit to the rotation, you just have to use it all the way through, no matter what happens. Like, of course you have to make adjustments and analyze things on a game-to-game basis. So what he outlines there makes sense to me. Obviously, he's kind of covering all his bases a little bit, dancing around, you know, talking about being hard if you win game one to make a switch.
Well, he sounded like Razor partway through there, right? He sounded like Scott for a sec, then he sounded like Razor. Well, we don't know. Maybe if somebody wins game one, we'll stick. But if it's a fully premeditated first four games where it's set, like all Marquette's 1-3, Swayman gets 2-4, and that's fully premeditated and not changing, then that gives you the flexibility in the last three games. If you need three more games, I mean, maybe you win all four of the first ones and you keep, you know, keep rolling, no issue. But how do you like – I'm looking at you, Razor.
Razor's just got the smile on his face this whole time.
I think it's so funny. I just think it's – like, I just – listen, as soon as I hear, yeah, maybe the rotation through four games, but it's playoff, you know, playoffs and production and like, yes, perfect world. They win the first four games. Each goalie gets one goal against in all four games. They go back and forth. The rotation's in full swing, right? It just won't work that way. Like I know it's not going to work that way. I know someone's going to get punched in the mouth, and now you're in a fight, and now you have to make decisions. And I think, listen, I think that just like continues to prove how hard it is to stick to a strict rotation. It just like they are not going to go in saying we are going to do this rotation and that's it. If that's what people want to hear, I think that answer confirms that we're never going to hear that.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Like we're
no, that
not
is fair.
We're going to see both goalies. I am convinced that we will see both goalies in the playoffs. I am convinced of that. That doesn't mean that. So again, this whole, like, I feel like we're in semantics now with the word rotation. We're in full semantic mode with the rotation, whether it's a two-game rotation, right? Like, we started working into that, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, maybe we'll see the goalies play two games in a row, and then, well, no, we won't because both goalies are playing great now, and now we're going to just rotate. So, oh, all of a sudden, that two-game rotation on two-game rotation that Monty talked about a month ago is long gone. They're not going to go. They're splitting these games, by the way, like the next three games, four games.
Because we talked about this when he said, well, we need to prepare someone for the emotional, like the full emotional load of they've been rotating the whole year. We need to try to, you know, get out of the rotation the last few weeks if that's what we're not going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they've kept with a rotation. So it feels like it's set up for that.
The plan changed.
Yeah. We haven't gone to many texts, but I want to now because this ties into one from the 774. We have the same goalie situation in the playoffs as last year. What will we do differently this playoff season? And I think the biggest change is I do believe they're going to make a point to get both goalies in early in the series. And whether that's 1-2 and then 3-4 from there, or maybe someone starts 2 and then someone gets game 3, like, I don't think you're going to see them ride a goalie for 6 games straight like they did last year. It just doesn't seem to be shaping up that way. And the one, you know, I'll keep coming back to the answer I got from Montgomery and up in Montreal when I asked him, you know, could you do what you did last year, which was rotate right to the end of the regular season and then try to ride one guy? And while he didn't 100% say, no, we can't do that, he did say, like, you know, we learned that it's tough to rotate all year and then put all the playoff workload on one guy. So I feel like, to me, that kind of ruled out trying the same thing they did last year. Like, I feel like they conclude, or at least Montgomery and possibly others within the organization, concluded that that was a mistake. So how it looks and how strict of a rotation it is, I do think you're going to see both goalies early in the series, like within the first three games.
Yeah, maybe. I just hope that they don't do it for the sake of doing it. And I think talk radio, I think people on the outside are undervaluing what a playoff win is. I think we are willing to throw a game away because we want to see both goalies play. That doesn't make sense to me.
I just don't view it like there's nothing about it that's throwing a game away to me. Like, I think both these goalies have to be fresh. Like, neither one of them's just, they haven't run with a job like that. Like, they haven't had that kind of workload. I don't think it suits either of them well. I think part of the reason that you've had such good goaltending the last 2 years, last year, number one in the NHL in team save percentage. This year, number two behind only Winnipeg, who...
But regular season, we can agree, regular season's different than playoffs,
it's
right?
Different, but I also think because both goalies get enough rest, I think that keeps them both closer to the top of their game. Like, I actually do think you lose something if you ride one of them, because I think what you have going has been so good.
And I think you also have a chance to lose, like, one, like, the sharpness of that second person that's sitting. Like, Swayman's sharp, like, when he sat, well, he didn't start six games in a row, and he has to start game seven. Like, is he as sharp as if he had seen time earlier? I know he came in for, like, 5 minutes in one of the games because Ullmark got in a fight, but, like, if he had played game three, or just, I'm just picking a random game, does he have a better game in game seven? Like, you, that's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you
no,
risk...
you're not allowed to do that, because Aiden Hill didn't play for three rounds, and he was very sharp
that
in
is,
the Stanley Cup final.
That's true.
So, you're a pro, you have to be sharp whenever you get put in there. It doesn't... You can't do that. That's my point, is you can't, like, sacrifice a playoff game to keep someone sharp at that time.
But why is it
sacrificing a game, though? Like, both of these goalies are playing at such a high level that...
I'm saying, well, okay, again, it's all scenario-based, right? But let's say, and who's starting game one?
That's another question.
That's who's starting game one, okay? And whoever it is who starts game one, whether it, okay, let's say it's Swayman, okay? Let's go the other way, because we did the leanest thing last year. Swayman plays the first game, gets a shutout. Are you really putting Linus in game two at home after a shutout from Jeremy Swayman against Tampa Bay?
I'm actually saying yes on that.
And then they lose 6-5, and Linus plays bad.
All right, then it's Swayman's
series.
So
then you wasted a win. You wasted a game.
But I wouldn't look at it like that going in, because I don't think Ullmark is somebody that you're, like, you're throwing it away. Like, Ullmark can win. It would be a uncharacteristic thing for him to give up six goals, right? Like, that wouldn't be a normal performance for him, and there's no way to know that going in. But, like, I wouldn't say they're both playing so well that I don't see putting one guy in over the other making...
Okay, so...
I understand the shutout situation.
I'm just saying, like...
But Riz, like that, because that can also go the other way where, okay, Swayman's great game one, and then you start him game two, and it's the first time in however many, has he started two in a row? I'm sure he started two in a row at some point earlier, but in months that he started two in a row, and he could stink in game two. And like, now the question is going to be the other way, where it's like, well, why didn't you rotate? You had this rotation going so well, and you tried to do this ride one guy thing again. That hasn't worked the last 2 years.
Has a goalie, someone's got to go deep dive. Has a goalie in the NHL playoffs ever had a shutout and sat on the bench the next game in the history of hockey? I would venture that it's an absolute no. So again, I know the scenario is different. It's these guys. I just don't know if that is the case. And I think we saw last season that there is – There's scenarios that are going to dictate goalies not rotating in playoff series. There's just so many things. So I think we're going to see both guys just because they've talked so much about it. But I'm also, I think there will be some hard discussions just to try and pull that off if they get on a roll and win a couple games early in the series. You don't like to change things when you're winning.
But yeah. They've won all season rotating. So, like, I know.
It's just different. Regular season's just different. That's all.
They're also a different duo as well. Like, I feel like this works best for them as a duo.
Do you think that you, again, put both of them on a lie detector test that they're going to say, I'm better in a rotation, or I'm better playing all seven games of the Stanley Cup playoff?
I think they both want to get as much playing time as possible, but I think that they understand that.
Like, do you think that they think they're not better?
I think that everybody has to, though, right?
Well, that, yeah,
so, to think that way.
Correct. Which, and they truly believe it. So, what I'm saying is, I don't think we should like pass it on to the goalies and say they want a goalie rotation.
No, I'm saying it's worked for them.
But they would suggest that it would work for them to play every game too.
I think that like I'm sure they have the confidence to believe, hey, I can handle the full workload. But I would also flip that and say, like, if you ask them, you know, has this goalie rotation worked for you? Like, has it made you better? I think they'd also, like, I think the truthful answer would also be yes to that.
It's been there. So they've had to deal with it, right? They've had to deal with it.
I feel like also they have a unique relationship where it's different than when you played and goalies were, there was a little bit more animosity between goalies who were fighting for a starting job than these two, because like Swayman is like, he's like Uncle Swayman for the Allmarks. Like they have a legitimate close, like brother kind of relationship.
I agree. I think they get along fantastically off the ice as people. They're both great people. They're great teammates. They you know, they're just always going to be good people, no matter what. Now, Swayman's up, right? So what are you giving him contract wise if to play half of the games? And do you think it's less than if he played every game? And do you think that he thinks about that?
Oh, he absolutely thinks about it, but
maybe. But I think everyone needs to like shelve that discussion until the off season. Like,
yeah.
Well, sure, but if you're Jeremy Swayman, I mean, you're not shelving it, right?
Well,
like
he
wants to win and everything else. But I'm assuming as a player, I would be thinking if I play every single one of these games, I'm going 7 years, $8 million. If I don't, I'm going 2 years, $4 million. Oh, that's about $50 million not in my pocket. As a player, that would kind of bother me a little bit.
Yeah, and it's out of your control, I guess, if Ullmark's playing well, but it's also in your control if you're the guy who makes up for, you know, a bad game by Ullmark and you know, win yourself
there's a rotation.
Job, but you start with a rotation.
Well,
so how long do you go for the rotation? I guess that's another question, right? Like, how long do we accept the rotation? Do you literally accept it through four games and go down the series 3-1?
Well, no. if you're losing two games, no.
So you win? It's 1-1.
I would say until one guy has an off game.
But again, if you go through four games of the rotation, okay, let's do this scenario. You go 1-1 at home. Both goalies play great. Both goalies play perfect, 1-1. Then you lose game 3, 2-1, right?
Okay. So then you're going back to the game 2 starter for game 4.
And he loses again.
Now, listen, if your goalies perform poorly, then you have a problem no matter what. So,
but if one's not and one is, and you're rotating, and he costs you two losses, that's my thing, right? One guy wins, one guy loses in games 1 and 2.
Yeah,
you're with me.
Yes.
Game 3, the guy who won loses. Do you go back with the guy who lost again? Like I'm saying, do you stick to a strict rotation to go down 3-1? If
so,
one guy's
that
not
also matters,
well.
Like how they play, right? Yeah. Like. Did the game 2 loser play poorly and he was part of the reason you
exactly.
lost?
Exactly. So he is. So in my scenario, he is that.
The game 3 loser played well.
Yeah, and lost in overtime
right,
on the
then
road.
I'm giving him game 4.
So the rotation's gone right
away.
Yeah,
I think.
Yep.
Okay.
The first goalie, once one goalie has a bad game, I'm fine. If the other guy's playing well, I'm fine scrapping the rotation.
Okay.
And right. I think that a better way to look at this might be to just say, take away that bit of stubbornness that existed last year with making a move. Like, take away that hesitancy of making a move and be more open to it, because it seemed like there were chances in that series against Florida last year that they could have, but they were in that mentality, Razor, like you're saying, like riding the one guy. Be quicker to make the switch, I think, is probably the best way to look at it. You can go game by game. I guess the argument that Scott and I have been trying to make is just that I don't see a reason why the rotation would be a worse option than riding a guy the whole way through. And it looks like, at least if you have this mentality that it can be a rotation, you're willing to make moves in net quicker if you see something you didn't like in one guy. You're comfortable going to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And one last point I would just make here before we get to break on Swayman possibly looking ahead to his contract situation or whatever. I would say, listen, this was shaping up to be his season, his job to run with. He was the all-star. He struggled for a month after the all-star break. Like, that was within his control. He had a chance to potentially run with the job. In my mind, he opened the door for Ullmark to, you know, whether you want to say force a rotation or push him for the game one start, maybe even claim the game one start. So, you know, and Swayman wanted Ullmark to stay, like, or at least that's what he said publicly, and that's what I think he actually felt. I don't think he wanted Ullmark to get traded, so you can't have it both ways. Like, you can't, you know, want Ullmark here and be best friends and then get upset that you're splitting starts with him. So that's what I would say to that. We got last commercial break here. I see we got Kenny on the phone. We'll get to you after the break. Any last-minute calls, 617-779-7937. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. Had to get Pink Floyd's Eclipse in there. You guys got any eclipse plans?
I'll be at my house. I'm not driving. I heard people are driving to Niagara Falls to watch it.
Yeah, that's the best spot, right?
Yeah, or like northern New Hampshire, Vermont. You can also get the full 100%.
I was going to say, well, Monty, unfortunately for people in the Boston area, it's not going to be the total eclipse here unless you drive north.
Yeah, I think we're getting like 92 or 93% or something.
I'll settle for that. I'm not driving 5 hours. I'm not crossing the border to Niagara Falls to watch, but just make sure you have your glasses. That's the main
thing.
Don't
look directly at it.
Just please don't look directly at the sun. This is a PSA.
All right, Kenny's up north. Kenny's in Maine. Let's go to him here. He's got some thoughts on Bruins defense. Kenny?
Kenny?
Yeah.
There we go.
Hopefully you can hear.
Yep.
Every year, we have two of the top goalies in the NHL, and I'm sure everybody would agree. And it seems like when it comes to playoff time and everything, if I was the coach, I think the least of my worries would be the goalies. I think you could keep one in. You don't have to rotate. The biggest problem with the Bruins has always been for many years is they're not being tough enough in front of the net. They're not getting back, clearing out in front of the net. They're not getting between the outside players and the post to make sure that nobody's open on the outside on the other side. And a lot of the forwards, too, aren't back-checking the way they should be. And I think if they play a better game on defense, clearing out in front of the net and covering the guys like they should be on the outside post, having your forwards crack down on them, get them on back-checking so everybody's coming back. I think that's where the games are lost. I don't think it's the goaltenders. It's hard to be a goalie and then never have anybody back-check or cover guys in front of the net. They put all the pressure on the goalies.
All right, then. Thanks, Kenny. So I do think the Bruins have gotten better in terms of preventing high danger chances over these last couple of weeks. I think that's been part of this getting dialed in, locking in, not beating themselves, as Charlie McAvoy put it. On the season as a whole, it's been a concern. I've highlighted, you know, one of my favorite stats this season was, well, it's changing now because the 16 teams in the playoffs, especially in the East, keep changing. But for most of the season, of like the teams in the playoff picture, they were 15th out of 16th in high danger chances allowed, which isn't good enough. But they've shown improvement recently. I think Wotherspoon and Peak together on that third pairing, we haven't gotten to this yet, but I thought they did a terrific job against Tkachuk and Bennett on Saturday. Montgomery said they tried to get that matchup. I thought they shut him down defensively and matched the physicality, the intensity. Like, they're up to that challenge. So I think that goes a long way when you have a third pairing that can handle some of that real defensive, you know, kind of grit work.
And Carlo, too. He was nails yesterday. He's been nails against those top teams in his physicality. He's ramped it up a little bit, stood up in all those scrums. So you have those three guys playing that way, and then you're not even talking about your top pair yet and what they bring together. It's I've liked the way the back end is starting to set up. Again, the simplification of things, I think, is really the thing that's leading to the less chances against.
Yeah, I mean that pair looked very good. Is that your third pair for the playoffs, Razor?
It'll be matchup. I'm sticking with my matchup dependency. I think, you know, if you're playing Toronto, it might look a little different than if you're playing Tampa Bay, just a little bit.
It seems like Tampa is the most likely situation now more than Toronto. So
yeah, so you're probably starting game one there. You know, the road might be a little bit different depending on, you know, does the Kucherov line look a little different than the Tkachuk line? Yes, to me it does.
Yes.
So you're probably not matching Weatherspoon and Peacock with a Kucherov line in a similar way. So again, that's kind of where on the road it might be a little bit different, where you don't control the matchup the way you do. But I think this is the team six for opening night.
Yeah, one of the texts we got, this was from 603. From a little while ago, but Razor, who do you think is the weakest link on defense? This person says, to me, it's Carlo. It seems like every time they get scored on, he's on the ice standing around, which I don't agree with, and also statistically just isn't true. He's one of their better defenders in terms of 5-on-5 goals against, and he's getting all the toughest assignments and D-zone starts, so...
Yeah. Yeah, he's out there for goals. It's just like David Pastrnak turning the puck over. Well, yeah, he has the puck the whole time. You know, it's inevitable. So, listen to this. This is a good one here.
This one, because it got stuck in my head the other day, last time we were recording the podcast, one of our other co-hosts, Brian D3, said, DeBrusk is always hot and cold, and then I had this song stuck in my head the whole time.
You know, hopefully he's hot 2 weeks from now.
I'm going to say that, on a very last note, that is someone they need to get going again, because Jake DeBrusk, unfortunately, has gone cold again at a not very good time for it. But that's all we've got for this week. We got to get out of here. Christian Arcan coming up next. We will be back with Sunday Skate next Sunday, 9 a.m.